Well, welcome. We are glad that you are that you are here today. For those of you that you may not know this about me, if you've been around here for long enough, you would know this, that I am a huge baseball fan. Okay, I grew up with this. It was something that my father passed on to me when I was really young. And I pass it on to both of my boys, and I'm watching them pass it on to their children. And we really are a baseball family. And what's really interesting is that you are either a baseball fan or you're not. Okay? And so when I say that I'm a baseball fan, sometimes people look at me and go, "What a dumb sport. You know, people standing around doing nothing." You know, and it kind of comes from football fans, you know, who have that analysis. But it's kind of the way it is, I suppose. But I had a baseball fan's dream come true yesterday. Well, maybe not a dream come true, but I had a great baseball day. And I got up yesterday, and we drove up to Prosper and watched my one grandson play T-ball, and then you know, came home and got to watch the Rangers on television, and then late last night, after my wife had gone to bed and everything was done, I turn on the television and there's college baseball on, and I absorbed all of it in. But especially last night as I was watching it, there was something that registered with me that really never had. You know, when you learn to play baseball, now this is probably true for other sports, I just happen to know this one better than other sports. When you play T-ball, I was thinking about watching my little five-year-old play baseball, or whatever game he was playing. It was in a baseball game. He was playing some sport, okay? And you've all seen that? You know what that kind of looks like. Soccer is much easier. You know, you just run, you know, and you cheer because they run. There's a little more going on with baseball. And so the first thing that you learn in baseball, one of the first things you learn is that you have to hit the ball and you run to first base. You know, and that's like a major thing for a five-year-old to understand. Well, it's so funny to watch them because they hit the ball and they run, and his strides are about this long, and he's just, you know, running down there, and it's like he gets to first base and everybody cheers. You know, you did it. You accomplished baseball. But what's really funny about it is that you get there as a five-year-old, and then you just stand on it, you know. Or heaven forbid if you run past the base, you know, you got to run back and get on it and stand on it, you know. And then the next player gets up and they hit, and then everybody, parents, coaches, everybody scream, "Run!" And they take off running, you know, to second base, you know, and they run and run and run and run and run. Of course, nobody can pick up the ball anyway. But they're running and running and running, and he gets to the base and stands on it, you know. And we cheer and cheer, you know. And I was just watching that, and it's just pretty funny how you start off learning the basics of baseball. And I had this great experience yesterday of just seeing how this game progresses, because I got to go and watch a high school game right after that on our way home, and watching these kids who've been playing baseball for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and nobody has to yell at them to run to first. Okay, I mean, they hit the ball and they run, and the better players, they know that you don't just run straight down to first base. You curve a little bit so that you can get an angle on the base, because you're going to go to the next base, and they're trying to pick up where the ball is, and they're trying to listen to their coaches and making decisions and going, and it's not T-ball anymore. And then watching the college game last night, it was like, it just blew me away how talented these, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids are, how well they play the game. And there were just things that happened in this game that were amazing. And then in the middle of the day, I watch, you know, the Rangers play, and it's just the highest level of baseball there is. They're all still playing the same game. But from T-ball up to professional baseball, men who are being paid millions and millions and millions of dollars to be great at what they are doing, there's a change in the way that they perceive baseball. It's still baseball, but the older you get and the more that you play it, the more strategy there is, the more nuance there is, the more there are things that if you don't learn to do those things, you're not going to continue to play. And they become instinctual, and they're much deeper. There are things that my grandson's 5-year-old T-ball coach, actually, he's pretty funny because he tries to teach them these great truths of baseball. And all they want are the ring pops at the end of the game. That is all they are playing for. One of the first things that we learn as followers of Christ, especially if we start out as children in the church, is that we learn this word salvation. It's one of our early words. Maybe we don't teach the word when you're 5 years old, but it's pretty close at that point to being taught. It's one of the biggest, broadest, deepest, most nuanced words in the Bible. See if you can follow with. When I was a T-ball Christian, okay, are you with me? When I was a T-ball Christian, salvation simply meant avoiding hell and getting to heaven when I died. That was the first lesson that I learned. The little lessons in children's church and so on and so forth. We sang about heaven. That was what this game was all about, was somehow winning in the end and getting to heaven when we died. But I didn't stay a T-ball Christian. As I grew older, this central teaching of the church, this foundation of our belief system, took on new meaning, bigger meaning, richer, fuller. Certainly, getting to heaven after we die is so completely amazing. My mind can't comprehend the greatness of that. I don't know about you, but if I sit and try to contemplate that, it is more than overwhelming. However, when we read through the Bible, the word salvation, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, has so much nuance. It has so much additional meaning. There's so much more to the concept of salvation that it's important that we don't stay T-ball Christians. It's important that we understand that the goal isn't just to run to first base, stand on the base, and jump up and down. There is way, way more to this. We started a study a number of weeks ago in just the second chapter of Philippians, just kind of looking through this great chapter. And we've come up to this spot in it where we come to this wonderfully simple, confusing, bold statement that Paul writes midway through the second chapter of Philippians. If you have your Bible, you can certainly open up and follow along, or you can kind of look up here. We're going to read it. This is the passage that we are at in our study. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Now, I'm telling you, when I call this wonderfully simple and confusing, I mean what I'm saying. This is one of those passages in the Bible where, I'm just telling you, you ought to read. You ought to do what I get to do most every week, and that is to pore over books and commentaries and websites and blogs and so forth, and read what learned men and women write about this passage. I mean, there are books, there are journals, and there is huge disagreement among them all, who are all Christians, by the way, about what Paul really meant when he wrote these things. Now, you can sit there and go, looks simple to me. And honestly, in my early life, I kind of looked at it and saw it as being a fairly simple thing. And the older I've gotten, the more I've realized that there may be a little bit more to this. What does it mean to work out your salvation? That's the critical part of this. The disagreement that pastors and theologians and commentators have over this is, well, really, do we work our own salvation? Is our salvation up to us, you know, that we work hard over it and we get it? Or I thought God said that He's the one that saves us by the death of Christ on the cross, and we don't have anything to do with that. We go back to Ephesians 2, for by grace you are saved through faith, you know, not of yourselves. There's nothing you can do to save yourselves. And then other people come back and they go, but Paul says, work out your own salvation. You know, it's an amazing thing. So the question becomes, when we talk about salvation, what is our role? What do we play in this? For me, the way I understand this passage is the way that I try to understand every other passage in the Bible, and to try not to make it overly confusing for myself. And so when you look at a passage like this or like any other ones, I think it's important to always see the biggest of pictures of what Paul is writing about. And this passage right here begins as passages that Paul writes so often. It begins with a tiny word. This part of the passage begins with the word therefore. And you know, really? We're going to have a sermon on therefore? No, little. Real little. Therefore, whenever Paul writes that, whenever the other Bible writers write that, frankly, whenever we say something like therefore, what it means is, in light of everything else I just said. So it ties directly to what has already been said. The truth that he is writing here doesn't just stand out there on its own. It's not hanging out there somewhere. It is specifically related to what he has just said. And that's what's critical in this. So, I just want you to see a couple of things. These are places that we've studied over the last 6 or 8 weeks. Okay, but I just want to point you back to them. In the first chapter of Philippians, at the beginning of his letter, he wrote this: whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. In one spirit, striving together as one for the faith of the gospel. One of the things that we know about this passage, about this letter, is that Paul is writing to a group of people who are preparing to go under fairly intense persecution. Paul is most likely writing from jail himself. He's writing in the face of opposition. And he is saying to this group of Christians, look, whatever you are getting ready to go through, whatever you are going to face, however God is going to lead you through things, whatever, make sure that you act right. Make sure you conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of Jesus dying on the cross for you. And he even goes further to define what it means to conduct ourselves in a worthy manner, which means we need to be of one spirit and of one mind, contending for the one goal that we have. We are to be people that are together in all things. That's what he starts out with. And then, just a few lines later, look what he says. He says, make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. He just goes and reinforces it again. We need to be one with each other. There needs to be unity in the body. We need to be in this together. Then he goes on, just right after this, he writes this. Do nothing. But picture him writing this to us. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. And I just find this incredible that this is this group of people that are getting ready and are in fact facing intense opposition to their faith. And the thing that Paul is telling them to do is stay together. Do not be selfish. Look after the needs of others. Always put others above yourselves. Every time. All the time. That's what it means to conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel. And then in this section, he just kind of finishes with this line. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Jesus. Have the same mindset as Jesus. Do what he would do. That's the teaching is for us. And we are not people getting ready to face intense opposition. It doesn't appear that way. We get to live our lives out pretty much any way that we choose. The teaching is still the same. Live selflessly. Live putting the needs of others above your own. Give of yourself. Be like Jesus. And we know where this passage continues, because that's what we've looked at the past few weeks, of this great poem in the New Testament of Jesus who laid down his life on our behalf, giving us the supreme example of what it means to put others ahead of ourselves. Okay, I want to go back to where we're at now, in the 12th verse. So I'm going to read it again. Therefore, in light of all of that stuff that I said about unity and loving and putting others ahead of yourselves and being one with each other, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. So what does it mean? You know, how did he go there? Well, Paul has just finished saying, urging this Philippian church to be selflessly united with each other. Especially in his absence, because Paul is in jail. He's going, you guys, no matter what, you have to stay together. You have to serve each other. You have to care about each other's needs. Now, if you miss that as the context, I think we'll miss what he's trying to say. He says, in light of all of that, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Okay, that word, work out, the core meaning of it is to bring something to completion or fulfillment. Making reality something that's already happened. So, all of you that are parents, you'll understand this, but I'll tell you, if any of you in here that are parents of brothers, I suspect sisters did this too, but I have no firsthand confirmation of this. Here's what it was like. We had two boys growing up in our house. Look, you know it, and I know it. You guys both love each other. You are not acting like it. Go in your room and work it out. Does that ring a bell with anybody here? Now, I suspect brothers and sisters do that too, and husbands and wives probably need somebody to say that to them too. You know, go to your room and work it out.
Yeah.
Hey. And so, we get that, don't we? I mean, without any further explanation, we kind of understand how that plays out. You got brothers that love each other. They didn't do anything to make them brothers. That was not up to them. They became brothers, and they love each other. They weren't acting like it. Go to your room and work it out. They didn't go in their room and try to create a loving relationship. They probably had to go in there and I don't even want to know what they did to work it out. Okay, but eventually they came out acting like brothers. Okay? They had worked out their love for each other. Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel. What Paul is saying in this passage, in this letter, I think, and we can debate, but I think what he's saying is that salvation is something that is done together. That's our context. Salvation is something that's done together, that is worked out together. When he says work out your salvation, that's what I see when I picture this. I get this. This may be a little different than what you have ever heard, and so be it. When we make salvation simply personal, my salvation, me going to heaven when I die, whatever happens to the rest of you, that's your business. When we make salvation personal, I think we're stuck being T-ball Christians. I think we've just made this whole thing, this whole thing of following Jesus, like my 5-year-old grandson getting to first base, stopping and jumping up and down. When salvation is that. Woohoo! I get to go to heaven. That is not the context of what Paul has been writing about. Not even close. I think when we are stuck being T-ball Christians, we're completely missing the richness and the fullness of what it means to be saved, especially being saved in a community of saved people. You know, the Bible uses all sorts of ways of saying this, and we've done this before. And honestly, we're going to come back next week and talk specifically about salvation again. I think it's worth our time. It's worth our effort to understand it. But the words, there are multiple words that are used that are translated salvation or some form of it in the New Testament and in the Old. It's a huge, huge word. But to be saved means, here's just some of them. To be saved means to be delivered from sin. To be rescued from the power of the evil one. to be set free from our past, to be redeemed, born again, given a new life, called out of darkness into light, passing from death to life, being raised to walk a new life, being filled with His Spirit, and certainly being brought into the family of God. Those are all definitions. Those are all ways of understanding this one word. This one word that we use and we hold on to, and we like to jump up and down when we get to first base, and yet we miss all of the nuance, all of the depth, and all of the meaning of salvation when we have made our goal simply to get to heaven when we die. Are you getting that? For years, it took years of my life to move beyond just a simple definition of salvation to one that is much richer and fuller. So we're actually going to look at some of those next week, some of those passages and where those words are. But right here in this passage, according to Paul, salvation is not worked out in my life. Salvation has not been completed in us until we are of one mind and of one spirit, and until we are working selflessly together for the good of others. Salvation has not reached the end of its course, not by any means, because salvation is far from personal. There's nothing in this passage, there is nothing singular. Even every verb in this passage is plural. It's about us. It's not about me. In fact, to write everything that Paul has written about us and then somehow in the middle of this letter switch over to, oh, well, this right here, this line is really just personal. You work out your own salvation personally. It is totally inconsistent with what he's been writing about. And I love this. He's telling them, when he says, therefore, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Actually, the proper way of reading that is to work out your own salvation. That's really what it's saying. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. He's talking to a group of people. He's not talking to individuals. He's talking to a group of people. He's going, you guys need to work this out on your own because I'm not going to be there to help you. You get it? When my sons, I won't go too far, simply because one of them is here. And he always gets picked on. When my sons were not behaving properly, how about that? That's a good way of saying it. I got other ways. When they weren't behaving properly, and I said, you two just need to go work this out, I realized, and they came to realize, that working out their relationship was not something that they could do individually. They needed the other one to cooperate. You that are parents know that. You always have one that wants to work it out and the other one that just messes everything up. And salvation is not completed in us. It has no chance of being everything that God designed salvation to be until we are working selflessly for the good of each other. when he writes this here, he's not saying, you work out your salvation and I work out my own. That is so very contemporary. You know, I handle my stuff, you handle your stuff. You know, I'm not responsible for you. That is not the way Paul sees this at all. We work out our salvation collectively. And then he says to do this. Do it with fear and trembling. Do it with fear and trembling. I'm going to give you my opinion. I don't think he's talking about God much right here. You know how we're supposed to fear God and tremble before God and so on and so forth. He doesn't make that reference here. This is not about work out your salvation because you're afraid of the retribution of an angry God. You know, you better work it out quick. That's kind of the angry parent part of it, where we, you know, I put my boys in the room and go, okay, you got 10 minutes to work it out or you are going to face my wrath right now. Okay, that we understand that concept. But that's not what's going on here with God, not even close in the way that I read it. It's about us working out our salvation together in unity, selflessly serving and submitting to the best interests of each other. And certainly it is to be done out of reverence and awe and a deep respect and an awareness of God being the Creator over everything. But I don't think that's the context of what he's writing. If I could put what Paul's writing, this is my understanding of this, so we can, you know, we can talk about it. But when I read this in the context of the rest of the letter, I think what Paul is saying is, you guys better start taking your salvation seriously. You're messing around with it. Start taking it seriously. Put a little fear and a little trembling into it. This is serious business. That's what I think he's saying to them. What if we were as serious about salvation as we were about our personal finances? Okay, now some of you are you love keeping track of your personal finances. That would not be me. But some of you love keeping track of your personal finances, and you check your bank account every night, and you're following it down, and your blood pressure goes up when the lines don't match up, and you know, not enough income and too much output, and you obsess over money. I won't have you raise your hand, but I know there are some of you that are in here that are that way. Well, what if we obsessed over our salvation the same way we obsess over our finances? Or what if we were so focused and so centered on our salvation the way that we are about our children? Or our education? Or our job? Or our health? What if we approached salvation with the same sobriety, being discerning? What if we looked at our salvation and completely owned the struggle and the shortcoming, accepting that we cannot do this walk of faith by ourselves? I'll tell you, those of us, the guys that are participating in 42 days, we had a great week this week in the two groups that we're able to meet, discussing about why it is so difficult for us to take our faith seriously. When we can do all of this other stuff, we can focus on anything. I mean, there are some people that have like meticulous lawns and your cars don't drip oil. Ugh, that would not be me. Okay? Or fill in the blank. We possess the ability to focus our attention on anything that we want to focus it on. And Paul is saying, take your salvation seriously. There is nothing more important than this. The New Testament teaches that salvation looks like saved people loving each other with selfless love. Bottom line is, if we're not living that out, not sure we're saved people. Paul's serious. And I guess so am I about this. And we're gonna prepare to share communion, as we do always on our Sundays with each other. Communion, by the way, really wasn't designed to be done by yourself. The word kind of betrays that as a definition, doesn't it? This is something we do in community with each other. As the trays come by you, you are welcome to take a piece of bread and a cup of juice. But I want to challenge you with this. Nobody can stand before God in your place. Okay, I don't want to make it sound like, hey, if you just go to church, you can get swept up with the crowd and, you know, you can get saved with everybody else that's on that boat. That's not how that works. We all stand before God individually. I understand that. But just like we kind of experienced the other night with this group of men, we realized that even something as deep and as profound as salvation, it's easier when you're doing it with others. That's why the church is so valuable. That's why relationships are so needed. Life is difficult. Walking a line of faith, experiencing the full realm of salvation, it is way too hard to do alone. That's what Paul's writing about in this letter, what he writes to us.